Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 9th of September 2025. My name is Jake and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Kristen Dennison and Patricia Lee. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 6:26 and sunset is at 7:28. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to OxTalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access OxTalk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
The leader of the Oxfordshire Conservatives has slammed silencing tactics in the ongoing debate surrounding asylum hotels. Liam Walker, a county and district councillor, has said, "It's vital that there is an open and honest debate on the issue and that labelling residents or councillors as toxic is wrong." The housing of asylum seekers has been a major national issue in recent weeks. Following significant protests in Essex, a High Court ruling allowed the local council an interim injunction to restrain the use of the Bell Hotel for the use of asylum seekers. However, that has since been overturned following a government appeal. Oxfordshire has several asylum hotels, including the Holiday Inn Express in Oxford, which has seen a number of protests, and the Four Pillars on Whitney's Ducklington Lane. West Oxfordshire District Council has ruled out any immediate challenge to the hotel in Whitney, with leader Andy Graham saying that he is proud of the way our local community has come together to support asylum seekers. The Liberal Democrat added, "There is no room for those who wish to divide our communities by raising fear through misinformation and heightened rhetoric." The Mayor of Whitney has also spoken about the issue, calling the debates increasingly toxic and adding that refugees are being used as political football. Andy Bailey said, "We need a more honest conversation, one rooted in facts, compassion and respect." Mr. Walker, who along with fellow Conservative Michelle Mead, wrote a letter urging West Oxfordshire District Council to challenge the Whitney Hotel, has reiterated that the Four Pillars' use is not in line with planning policy. He said, "The truth is, the use of hotels in this way are being imposed in our communities without proper consultation, without a clear plan for integration, and without any serious consideration of the pressures this places on local services. People in West Oxfordshire deserve answers, not lectures. He said that the overturning of the High Court ruling changes nothing about the fact that the use of the hotel in this way is not in line with planning policy. West Oxfordshire District Council must still explore, he said, every possible legal and political avenue to challenge this and put the interests of our residents first. Speaking on the wider issue, Mr. Walker said, "It's vital that we can have an open and honest debate about the use of asylum hotels without people being shut down or branded as divisive simply for raising legitimate concerns. Labelling residents or councillors as toxic because they question government decisions is not only wrong, it risks silencing the very voices we are elected to represent."
A festival celebrating Kenya brought colour, music, food, laughter, and the unmistakable warmth of the Kenyan community to Oxfordshire. Oxford Kenya Fest took place on Saturday, August 23rd at Horsepath Recreation Ground and was attended by the High Sheriff of Oxfordshire, John May. Mr. May enjoyed traditional Kenyan dishes such as nyama choma, chicken, and ugali. He said, "My thanks go above all to David Kimunya and his remarkable team for organizing such a joyful event. It takes vision and dedication to make something like this happen, and the result was a gathering that lifted spirits and reminded us of the strength of community." He also said the event stirred many memories for him, as Kenya holds a special place in his heart. He continued, "Over the past decade and more, I have spent a great deal of time in Kenya, as Nairobi was home to the regional office of the Duke of Edinburgh's International Award."
New plans to build a huge town in North Oxfordshire are just the start of the long-term vision for a vibrant community, say developers. Dorchester Living has submitted an outline planning application to Charwell District Council for the next phase of Hayford Park, which includes 9,000 homes, 5 schools and a train station. Hayford Park is a brownfield site comprising the former RAF Upper Hayford, 5 miles from Bicester. More than 1,200 homes have been delivered to date, together with Hayford Park School for children aged 3 to 16, a supermarket, pharmacy, hotel, barbers, restaurant, and a growing commercial cluster. The new plans include 9,000 new homes, 110 plus hectares of green and blue infrastructure, from woodlands and parks to allotments and recreation spaces, 4 new primary schools, a new secondary school, and new buildings for libraries and local community centres. Dorchester Living says there will also be dedicated sports facilities and employment space to support more than 5,000 new jobs, many in clean tech, low carbon and creative sectors. A park with 65,000 trees planted will serve as a multifunctional destination. Looking ahead, there is also an ambition to reopen Ardley Station, strengthening regional links to both London and Birmingham. The proposals come amid plans for a £600 million historical theme park, less than 5 miles away. Concerns have previously been raised about the scale of development in the area and the impact this will have on infrastructure. Reacting to the new Hayford Park plans, Callum Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, said, "We need more affordable housing in our area so that young people growing up here have the chance to have their own home, and the many people waiting for social housing can finally get a home suitable for them. The challenge is where it is best built. New homes on brownfield sites are a better option than building on productive agricultural or greenbelt land. This proposal is, however, a huge one. If our area is to absorb 9,000 new homes at Hayford Airfield, the government should acknowledge that contribution to its housing targets and reduce the pressure to build in other less suitable locations across our area. The long-term ambition is for Hayford Park to become the UK's first energy surplus town, generating more energy than it consumes through a combination of solar and wind power generation, energy-efficient design, and low-carbon transport. Paul Silver, CEO of Dorchester Living, said, "This is a pivotal moment in the evolution of Hayford Park. The master plan we've submitted is the result of years of careful thinking and extensive collaboration with a variety of different groups, including Hayford Park Parish, Great Western Rail, Hayford Park Schools, and the wider local community. This is underpinned by our genuine belief that growth can be delivered in a way that's community-led and environmentally conscious. Subject to approval, Dorchester Living hopes to gain planning consent in early 2026.
Plans for a £600 million historical theme park in Oxfordshire have been submitted to the council. Puy de Fou, the creator of award-winning history-themed destinations in France and Spain, has submitted an outline planning application to Charwell District Council for the site near to Junction 10 of the M40 on land north of Bucknell near Bicester. Bosses say this followed an extensive consultation, which took more than a year and included 6 in-person events and more than 250 individual meetings. The decision now lies with the council, and if approved, the new park will open in phases beginning in 2029. Puy de Fou says that by the time the park is fully developed, it will directly employ around 2,000 people, support a further 6,000 jobs in hotels, restaurants, suppliers, and other local businesses, and deliver a £500 million annual boost to the local and regional economy. The park would be open between April and October and would have 4 period villages and 13 live shows, eventually attracting an estimated 1.47 million visitors a year. There will also be 3 hotels, each themed to different periods in British history, and a state-of-the-art conference center, which will be open on demand all year round. Olivier Strebel, CEO of Puy de Fou, said, "We have only submitted these plans after an extensive consultation, which took over a year and included 6 in-person events and over 250 individual meetings, all of which have helped to shape our final proposals. We did not rush our consultation because we wanted to get our proposals right. We have wanted to come to the UK for many years. Britain has such a rich, colorful, and exciting history, and the site we have chosen near Bicester is the ideal location to create a world-class destination that will bring that history to life. This will be a £600 million investment in the local economy over the next 10 years and will create thousands of jobs, but it will also have the environment and sustainability at its heart. The proposals also include extensive landscaping and planting with new ponds, lakes, and gardens, as well as over 5 miles of new hedgerows and 20,000 new trees being planted. In June, Puy de Fou announced that it had formed a working partnership with Activate Learning, which operates Banbury and Bicester College, in a bid to secure employment for the site. The college in Banbury is the largest college in North Oxfordshire, offering more than 100 courses for 16 to 18-year-olds and adults.
Former Prime Minister Gordon Brown has described a new report on child poverty as evidence of the urgent need to act on an issue facing millions. His comments come ahead of the expected publication of the government's child poverty strategy this autumn, having been delayed from spring. A report by the Independent Cross-Party Poverty Strategy Commission, published on Thursday, makes a series of calls, including to scrap the controversial two-child benefit limit. The Commission states that it is clearly a concern that more than one in three of the UK's future citizens are growing up in poverty, with all of the damage to educational outcomes and future health and employment prospects that comes with it. The most recent statistics showed there were 4.45 million children estimated to be in UK households in relative low income after housing costs in the year to March 2024, the highest number since comparable records for the UK began in 2002-2003. The Independent Commission's report calls for the two-child limit to be done away with as part of a group of wider measures to introduce a so-called benefits floor to ensure no one has to live in deep poverty where their total resources fall below 50% below the poverty line. They also called for the standard allowance and universal credit to be raised to provide at least the level of support needed for different families to avoid deep poverty, and for an assurance that any deductions from benefits such as debt repayments do not push families below the deep poverty line. They also called for a new social contract, where efforts to tackle poverty are shared between actors from across society, including everyone working as much as they can reasonably be expected to, employers providing decent wages and support for workplace health and well-being, and government structuring markets to ensure housing and childcare costs are reasonable. The group estimated that their recommended measures could reduce poverty by 4.2 million and deep poverty by 2.2 million. Mr. Brown, a former Labour Prime Minister, said, "This report reveals the deep, abject and worsening poverty faced by millions of children and the urgent need to act." His comments follow a call made recently for a rise in gambling taxes to cover the cost of scrapping the two-child benefit limit.
Noisy pilots are being given stricter guidance for flying from Oxford Airport, with staff checking from the gardens of neighboring residents. Both experienced pilots and learner pilots will be given official warnings under new rules by airport bosses. It is all part of London Oxford Airport's plan to be a better neighbor and reduce noise over Yarnton, Kidlington, and the wider area. Learner pilots are being given a little more tolerance, given they are learning, Will Curtis, managing director of London Oxford Airport, said. Historically, the airport has been Europe's foremost center for professional pilot training, with well over 40,000 students having started their careers. Flight schools based in Oxford train pilots who go on to fly for more than 100 airlines globally, including British Airways. Mr. Curtis said the airport just wants to keep aircraft to the noise abatement routes, which are preferred routes published on its website. They are not legal requirements to follow, but they are essentially best practice routes, and there are rules in the air which the pilots will follow, he said. They're neighbor-friendly routes, and we're just increasing the emphasis on those routes with our flying community. Staff members at the airport have been sent out to sit in the gardens of residents who accept them, who will then watch what the aircraft are doing. And if they're drifting over, they'll then take down the registration and the time. The aircraft, whether they are private or a flight school, are traced down. We'll then say to the school or the private owner that they were over the noise abatement route, please try to do better in the future, Mr. Curtis added. If they don't a second time, then we'll charge them an administration fee for chasing them down, and on the third occasion, we may impose operational limits. I say may, not because I want to dither about, but you have to understand that a young pilot, who's perhaps starting out in their career, has a lot of things to concentrate on in the cockpit. They're flying the airplane, talking to air traffic, managing the engine, and with that noise abatement and the strong wind, they might get blown over a built-up area. I'd rather they concentrate on flying the airplane. We've got to accept that inexperienced students will make more errors than perhaps a more experienced pilot. Simon Eaton, a Yarnton resident, said he welcomes the actions against noisy pilots. He said, "We welcome the airport's actions against pilots who breach low flying and noise rules. Residents want to work constructively with the airport and training schools to strike the right balance between their operational needs and the community's expectations."
The Mayor of Whitney has honoured the men and women who kept supply lines moving during World War II. Andy Bailey, along with Deputy Mayor Jane Doughty, raised the red ensign, the flag of the British Merchant Navy, at the Town Hall on Wednesday, September the 3rd, to mark Merchant Navy Day. Introduced in 2000, the day also recognises the dedication of today's seafarers, whose efforts ensure 95% of the UK's trade reaches our shores, often in tough and hazardous conditions. While the red ensign flies permanently over the National Merchant Navy Memorial in Trinity Square Gardens on Tower Hill in London, it is flown in tribute on September the 3rd on public and maritime buildings across the UK. Local authorities and port operators from the Shetland Islands to Falmouth and from Northern Ireland's Causeway Coast to Ceredigion and Great Yarmouth take part annually.
A controversial development has been unanimously approved despite the objections of the Town Council and over 150 others. Stanley Thomas Pennell Estate's application to build 59 homes on Fuller's Field, west of Primrose Avenue in Wantage, has been approved by the Vale of Whitehorse District Council. This is despite 156 objections being lodged by residents over two consultations in March and July. Only one supporting comment was received, but that did not stop its approval by the Planning Committee on Wednesday, August 20th. As such, it will be integrated into the wider Kingsgrove development, which is allocated for 1,500 homes, including a new primary school and employment spaces. This will take the total number of homes on the site to a possible 1,594, which factors in another recent planning application. During the meeting, planning officers said that the 2.65-hectare scheme had been considered for and planned, and so recommended it for approval. Within their report, they said, the application could support an economic and social objective through construction employment, increased investment in the local economy, and providing additional market and affordable housing. The application could also make contributions towards local infrastructure. The scheme is of an acceptable design with no unreasonable impacts on existing residents. Suitable vehicular access can be provided without detriment to highway safety or severe impacts on the road network. However, the development is not without controversy. Within the 156 objections, there were concerns raised about the fields being reserved from house building as a valued local green space and that the number of homes is too dense for the site. In addition, some residents said it would worsen congestion issues around the school and that local schools and GPs would be put under further pressure. Wantage Town Council also objected to the application, which was noted within the meeting. Nikki Brook, the agent for the application, said, "It is disappointing that the Town Council aren't here to present their concerns to you." Writing on the Kingsgrove Residents Group, James Hodgson also raised this. He added, "It is likely to be a disappointing result for many residents of Kingsgrove. From what I have read and understood from the application itself and the report from the planning officer, even if representation from Wantage Town Council has been in the meeting, I doubt that it would have made any difference." One concern raised by planning committee members was the 59 homes' potential impact on flooding, but Councillor Paul Barrow's worries were assuaged by a planning officer who assured him there is capacity within the network to deal with those flows.
Pupils arrived for their first day at a new school building, following a £2 million conversion of a former Premier Inn. The Unicorn School in Marcham Road, Abingdon, is a specialist independent day school for children aged 6 to 17 years who have learning differences, including dyslexia. The school wants to double in size, and in 2023 it bought the former Premier Inn and Ockmill Beefeater restaurant opposite its main site. On Thursday, head teacher Alison Woodworth-Sterler welcomed pupils to the new classrooms building for the start of the new academic year. She said, "This is very exciting for the school and will help with the development of our sixth form provision. The next phase now is the development of the former Ockmill building. I'm hopeful that the work will be completed as soon as possible." Beatrice, 16, who has been a pupil at the school for the past 4 years, said, "I like the new building. It feels much more like a senior school." The Premier Inn chain opened a new hotel at the end of 2023, close to the Marcham interchange, which meant the old hotel and a former restaurant were no longer needed. The purchase of the buildings from Whitbread PLC, the parent company of the Premier Inn chain, is allowing the Unicorn School to double its pupil numbers from 120 to 240 over the next few years. Andrew Day, the executive head teacher, who is overseeing the building project, said, "This will be transformational for the Unicorn School and for SEN, Special Educational Needs Provision, across Oxfordshire. Our contractors, Woolridge and Simpson, have done a fantastic job. The new buildings will allow us to double in size. The new classrooms will accommodate students in years 9 to 11 and the newly launched sixth form. Facilities include purpose-built art and science rooms, a library, one-to-one support spaces, therapy rooms, and additional classrooms to support the school's continued growth. The original Marcham Road site will remain in use for younger year groups. Recent upgrades there include new play equipment, additional classrooms, and improved staff facilities. The opening of the new building enables the launch of the school's first sixth form, offering a post-16 life skills programme. Students will be able to take GCSE resits in maths and English, alongside BTEC qualifications. The sixth form intake will include both existing Unicorn School students and pupils from other schools. The £2 million conversion of the former Ockmill Beefeater restaurant could take up to 2 years, and a fundraising campaign will help to pay for the costs.
Dogs will be allowed to explore one of Oxfordshire's most famous stately homes for the first time. Blenheim Palace near Woodstock is opening its formal gardens and walled garden to dogs for the first time for the Autumn Paws Outdoors event. The event will run from September 1st to October 5th, with dogs allowed to explore the courtyard, formal gardens, and walled garden. Usually, dogs are only allowed in the parks. Water stations are being dotted around to help dogs stay happy and hydrated. For this event, dogs are not allowed inside the palace or the adventure play area, but they are welcome in the pantry cafe and palace shop. A Blenheim Palace spokesperson said, "This autumn, Blenheim Palace is opening its formal gardens, courtyards, and walled garden to dogs for a special seasonal event, Autumn Paws Outdoors. From Monday, September 1st until Sunday, October 5th, visitors are invited to explore even more of the UNESCO World Heritage Site with their pooches in tow. To help dogs stay happy and hydrated during their visit, water stations will be dotted throughout the courtyards and walled garden. While dogs will not be permitted inside the palace or the adventure play area, with the exception of assistance dogs, They remain welcome in the Pantry Cafe and Palace Shop, so guests can enjoy refreshments without needing to leave their pets behind.
More than £46,000 has now been raised in memory of two firefighters who lost their lives on duty in May. Martin Sadler, 38, and Jenny Logan, 30, both died during a major fire at Bicester Moulton on Buckingham Road on May the 15th. Dave Chester, a 57-year-old father of two who worked at the site, also died. Now, a fundraiser organised by Bicester Rugby Club is supporting the firefighters' charity and has so far raised £46,078 towards its £47,500 target. Mr. Sadler was involved with the club for more than 20 years, playing senior men's rugby for more than a decade. A spokesperson from Bicester Rugby Club said, "A true clubman and rugbyman, he was always willing to pull on an opposition shirt if they were short of numbers. He just loved the game." After he finished playing, Mr. Sadler supported the club women's team, the Bicester Vixens, as their first aider. Ms. Logan joined the Vixens in November 2021. The club said she was a dedicated and driven number eight, committed to being the best player she could be for the team. "Jenny, it was so much more than her performance. She was a kind, gentle and thoughtful force to be reckoned with. The tragedy rocked the community, with tributes flooding in and thousands lining the streets for the funeral procession for Mr. Sadler and Ms. Logan on July the 31st and June the 14th, respectively. Mr. Chester's funeral, held on July the 8th, was private at the request of his family."
An 80-year-old fundraiser from Chipping Norton has been named as a finalist in the 2025 Just Giving Awards after walking the length of Britain to raise money for Alzheimer's Research UK. David Enser completed the remarkable 1,254-mile solo hike from John O'Groats to Land's End, driven by the deeply personal mission to honor his late wife, Susan, who died from Alzheimer's disease after a long and difficult battle. Mr. Enser said, "Alzheimer's is a brutal disease, not just for those living with it, but for their carers too. There is no cure yet, but there is hope through science. That's why I'm so passionate about supporting Alzheimer's Research UK." Mr. Enser's journey entirely on foot was physically and mentally challenging, especially at 80, but he remained determined to complete it in Susan's memory. He is no stranger to fundraising. Since starting his charitable journey, Mr. Enser has raised an incredible £42,000 to fund life-changing research. He said, "To be nominated for a Just Giving Award means raising more awareness for Alzheimer's Research UK and hopefully inspiring others to support the cause. This recognition is not about me. It's for everyone who is suffering or has lost someone to this devastating disease." Mr. Enser is one of 20 people to be named as a Just Giving Awards finalist this year after over 18,000 nominations were made by the general public. To be nominated, entrants had to have used Just Giving to raise money for a charity or personal cause over the last 12 months. The finalists were shortlisted by an internal judging panel from Just Giving, with four finalists for each of the five new categories chosen. Alongside the Endurance Mind Over Miles category, the other categories are Kids, Rising Star, Influencer, Social for Good, Team, Stronger Together, and Outstanding Commitment to the Cause. Pascal Harvey, President and General Manager of Just Giving, said, "In 25 years, more than $7 billion has been raised for good causes by millions of incredible fundraisers on Just Giving. The awards is our way of shining a light on those extraordinary individuals whose courage, compassion, and commitment inspire us all. With thousands of remarkable nominees this year, narrowing them down to just 20 finalists was no easy task. David's determination to walk the length of Britain at the age of 80 is nothing short of inspiring. His story is a powerful reminder that there are no boundaries when it comes to doing good. We're honored to have David as a finalist.
Oxfordshire Animal Sanctuary has said its record-breaking pet adoption levels are putting huge strain on its resources. The sanctuary in Studhampton cares for cats, dogs, rabbits and any other animal in need of help and rehoming. It regularly helps 500 animals every year find a new home, but saw a record-breaking number last year with 754 pets adopted. This year is shaping up for another record, with 27 pets rehomed in the past week alone. A spokesperson for the sanctuary said, "Thank you so much to all the incredible adopters who have offered a space in their hearts to one of our animals. We wish all the animals the very best in their forever homes and can't wait to hear how they are all getting on. Good luck in your new adventures." With so many pets needing their care and resources, and more admitted to the sanctuary every day, the organisation continues to appeal for donations and adopters. Pets such as Time, a 4-year-old Doberman dog described as a huge cuddle monster who just wants to be loved, remain in the sanctuary waiting for new owners. In an attempt to support their animal efforts, the sanctuary opened a new charity shop in Ensham at the weekend, a shop filled with community spirit, wagging tails and happy shoppers. The shop in Newland Street is the latest to join the charity's 3 other stores in Carterton, Whitney and Summertown. Donations can be made at www.oxfordshireanimalsanctuary.org.uk/donate.
White storks could soon return to the Oxfordshire countryside due to a scheme backed by Cotswold Wildlife Park. A rewilding scheme is working to re-establish the birds, which have not been bred in the UK since the 15th century, in the skies of southern England. The White Stork Project aims to establish at least 50 breeding pairs across the region by 2030. The project involves support from Cotswold Wildlife Park and the Roy Dennis Wildlife Foundation, Knepp Castle Estate, and private landowners in Sussex. Jamie Craig, curator at Cotswold Wildlife Park, said, "We received our first batch of birds in late 2016. This enabled us to set up a breeding group of 50 storks and also send enough birds to project partners in Sussex to establish small sedentary groups there. All these birds were imported from Warsaw Zoo in Poland and are rehabilitated injured birds from the wild that, unfortunately, could not be released due to disabilities that would have affected their chances of survival. The birds were quarantined before being moved into a large netted exhibit at the park." Mr. Craig said, "Two further imports bolstered numbers, and we could now wait for our birds to settle and mature before the serious business of breeding could begin. White storks begin showing pairing and breeding behaviors in late winter, and it is at this time that the dedication of their keepers is vital. Enormous quantities of nesting material must be added constantly whilst the pairs build their huge nests, and careful selection of twigs, sticks, and other favored materials is needed." He said each pair has its own preferences and will sometimes steal material from neighboring nests. Every year since 2016, the park has successfully bred chicks for the rewilding scheme, but 2025 was its most productive to date, with 48 chicks reared. Mr. Craig said, "After approximately 35 days, the chicks will hatch, and the keepers then assume the role of fairy godmother to chicks and adults. Although the adults will bring a good supply of food to the nest for the young, the keepers also assist feed, visiting each nest daily with quantities of finely chopped feed items, usually fish and insects, to ensure each chick's chance of survival is optimized and the workload of the parents with large clutches is not too exhausting. The chicks grow quickly and fledge at around 2 months old. Once independent, They are separated from the adults, identified, and given a 2-week settling period to ensure they are healthy and strong before being moved to release pens in Sussex. Mr. Craig said, "So far, we have transferred over 200 young storks to Sussex for release. Many have successfully crossed the channel and followed traditional migration routes down through Europe and into Africa. Storks do not return to their nesting ground until they have matured at 4 years, so we are all hoping for the first Cotswold storks to return to England and become a permanent breeding fixture in the landscape once again. Several birds are fitted with trackers, so their migration and movements can be monitored after release. All storks involved in the project are marked with unique colored rings for identification. White storks have a complicated history in Britain. Once a familiar sight, they vanished as a breeding species in the 1400s due to habitat loss and overhunting. They were eaten at medieval feasts and later persecuted during the English Civil War when they became associated with rebellion and insurgency. The White Stork Project is the first of its kind in the UK, and many hope it will restore the species as a breeding resident in the countryside."
An Oxford museum has been named as one of the top attractions in the world. The Museum of Oxford, located in St Aldate's, has been included in TripAdvisor's top 10% of things to do worldwide. As part of the TripAdvisor Traveller's Choice Awards 2025. The Museum of Oxford, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, tells a story of Oxford and its people through a range of social history objects, alongside interactive displays across two galleries. Inside the museum's two galleries, visitors can find collection items, video, audio, and interactive displays, and special exhibitions that uncover what makes Oxford such a special place to live, work, and study. The museum also hosts a lively program of regular events, including gallery tours, talks, city walking tours, family activities, late night openings, and more. To celebrate its 50th anniversary, the museum is working with Oxford's communities on an exhibition sharing 50 new stories about the heritage of the city. Through collaborative artworks, community collected objects, oral histories, and community labels, the exhibition spotlights community groups, volunteers, change markers, and artists across the city. The special exhibition is running until January the 3rd, 2026. The Museum of Oxford is open from Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Councillor Alex Hollingsworth, Cabinet Member for Planning and Culture, said, "It's good news that the Museum of Oxford has been recognised by visitors and TripAdvisor, especially as it celebrates its 50th anniversary this year. If you haven't visited the museum yet, this is a great reason to go and learn more about the history of Oxford." This comes after the Story Museum in Pembroke Street, Oxford, was crowned the best family attraction in the UK. The Oxford attraction scooped the Best Family Experience title at the National Muddy Stilettos Awards. It first won the award in the regional round, thanks to votes from the public. It was then picked by Muddy Stilettos editors as the best family experience in the country. The Story Museum's head of the creative programme, Amina Anayat, said, "We are over the moon to have won our category nationally. We work hard to provide memorable, inspiring experiences for young people, families and schools through our galleries and our learning programme. It means so much to us to have that recognised by this award." The museum, which celebrates storytelling through video games, inviting visitors to level up their imagination, recently expanded its offerings with a new permanent gallery, the Story Arcade, which was developed with help from the National Lottery Heritage Fund and opened in July.
A celebrity angler was spotted catching fish at an Oxfordshire fishery. Former England and Arsenal goalkeeper David Seaman, MBE, was at Linear Fisheries near Whitney earlier this month for the annual Catch of the Day charity fishing competition. The former football pro was the host of the event that attracted some of the top anglers from across the country. Tom Maker, Scott Lloyd, Damian Clark, and Carl Smith all came to fish at the fisheries St. John's Lake. Mr. Seaman, who spent his career throwing balls, not lines, and catching crosses, not fish, commented, "It was a real joy to return to St. John's Lake for another weekend of fishing and Eight of Willow. To see so many familiar faces returning after last year is testament to what a brilliant event this is."
The restoration of the Elizabeth Tower, famous for housing the bell known as Big Ben at London's Palace of Westminster, has been shortlisted for a prestigious award. Six projects are in the running for the Royal Institute of British Architects Stirling Prize, the UK's highest accolade in architecture, including Appleby in South East London, a model of housing for later living, and the new home of the London College of Fashion. The restoration of the Victorian Elizabeth Tower saw traditional materials and bespoke craftspeople used to rectify previous restoration mistakes and repair newly uncovered damage from the Second World War.
A new, much-needed 4-metre-wide walkway has opened at Botley Road in Oxford as part of a £231 million project to upgrade the city station. Network Rail closed the road at the rail bridge in April 2023 as part of the major scheme. The project includes replacing the rail bridge with better access provided for pedestrians and cyclists, creating a new western entrance to the station, and building a new platform to improve east-west rail links. The scheme has been hit by repeated delays, and the Botley Road is not due to reopen until August 2026. On Sunday, a new 4-metre-wide walkway, which links Botley Road to Frederswyde Square, opened, offering a significant improvement to existing access, with much more space for pedestrians and cyclists. Cyclists will be asked to dismount while using the shared surface until next year to allow for the safety of pedestrians while work continues in the area. Network Rail says the work at Botley Road is vital to creating a bigger, better station for everyone, providing more services with East-West Rail, adding rail capacity for the future, and an improved and safer road layout. Since the program was reset in January 2025, the project is delivering to the new schedule and Botley Road reopening by the end of August 2026. Marcus Jones, Western Route Director for Network Rail, said, "We're pleased to have achieved this milestone, which will greatly improve access for everyone at Botley Road in Oxford. I'd like to thank local residents, businesses, and the community for their ongoing patience and assure them that we're on track to the new timeline we committed to earlier this year." Liz Leffman, leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said, "We welcome the opening of this new walkway, which we trust will bring an improved experience to all users of the Botley Road while Network Rail's work continues." Anna Railton, deputy leader of Oxford City Council and a cabinet member for A Zero Carbon Oxford, said, "The new foot and cycle path is a welcome step in the Botley Road works and a reassuring sign that work is progressing on schedule. Not only is the new path a much-needed upgrade to the existing walkway, but it will also help to ease the flow of people in and around the area. I look forward to the second walk and cycle path opening next year." The cost of the project has increased due to the delays, and the £161 million total cost has now increased to about £230 million, according to Rail Minister Peter Hendy. The pathway leading from Botley Road to Frederswyde Square has been reconfigured on numerous occasions to accommodate the ongoing work. The route has become known among local residents as the Tunnel of Doom.
Airspace restrictions are due to be put in place over part of the Thames Valley area, for the state visit of US President Donald Trump. Thames Valley Police say a significant security operation is planned as President Trump makes his second state visit to the UK on September the 17th. The President will be hosted by King Charles for the visit, which comes just weeks after France's President Emmanuel Macron arrived in the Berkshire town of Windsor, accompanied by his wife. Airspace restrictions for aircraft and drones will be in place over and around the town between September the 17th and 18th. Chief Inspector Matthew Wilkinson of the Joint Operations Unit said, "We have a significant security operation in place in and around Windsor for the visit of President Trump. As is typical for events of this scale, we are implementing a significant airspace restriction to keep the local community and attendees at the event safe. We will be using police drones and support from the National Police Air Service in the area to enforce the restricted airspace. We will have resources available and tactics deployed to enforce these restrictions and deal with anybody who fails to adhere to them." The force said it is working closely with partners to ensure that the event passes safely and with minimal disruption to the local community. The announcement comes after thousands signed a petition earlier this year to stop the US president setting foot on British soil. Demonstrators previously announced plans to march through the streets of London and Windsor in protest with Seema Saeeda, spokesperson for the Stop Trump Coalition, claiming that President Trump is not welcome here. The 79-year-old Republican is expected to be accompanied by his wife, First Lady Melania Trump, as he also visits Buckingham Palace. It will be President Trump's second state visit to the UK, an unprecedented gesture for an American leader, after his first trip to England in 2019. News of the visit first broke in February this year when Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer presented the President with a letter from the King during a meeting at the White House in Washington, D.C. As the pair sat next to each other in the Oval Office, Sir Keir handed the President the personal invitation, later saying, "This is truly historic and unprecedented."
Oxford has been named the most Christmas-obsessed city in the UK. According to new data from Ashridge House Illuminated, festive-related online searches from the city have risen by 455% year-on-year, indicating that residents are planning their seasonal celebrations earlier than ever before. David Evans, managing director at Ashridge House Illuminated, said, "These early spikes in online searches show how important Christmas events have become as annual traditions. From festive light trails to Christmas markets and even the cheesy end-of-year panto, it's about creating moments that feel magical to the whole family. Searches for Christmas markets and festive light trails have each risen by 18%, while searches for PYO Christmas tree farms have increased by 10%. Light trails are proving especially popular, with online interest peaking at 241,400 searches in December, up from just 25,000 in August. Mr. Evans said, "The team at Ashridge House has worked tirelessly to create an unforgettable way to experience the festive season with friends and family. We can't wait to open our gates and welcome everyone back for a Christmas celebration like no other." Winter Wonderland in London's Hyde Park remains the UK's most Googled Christmas experience, drawing 11 million searches in December. However, interest in the event has dropped by 17% compared to last year.
Now, here is a sports update by Kristen Dennison.
Oxford United captain Elliot Moore has left the club via a mutual agreement. The 28-year-old centre-back joined the club in August 2019 and played 243 games for United. He was the skipper as the U's secured promotion via the Sky Bet League One playoffs in May 2024, but injury restricted him to just 26 appearances in the championship last season. Moore told the United website, "This is an extremely difficult decision after six fantastic years at the club. I arrived as a young defender looking to settle and find a home. Little did I know that signing for Oxford United would be the start of something special, creating incredible memories along the way. I'm proud of everything we have achieved together, from the heartache of Wembley to the joy of going back and getting the job done last May. To be the one who walked up those steps at Wembley and lift the trophy was a moment I'll cherish forever. I want to thank all the players, managers, coaches, and backroom staff who have been part of my journey. Everyone has played a role in my time here and in the growth of this club. And to the fans, thank you for taking me in and making me feel part of the Oxford United family from day one. It's been a privilege to wear the badge and the captain's armband. I've strived every day to represent the club and the supporters in the best possible way. This club has become my home, and I leave knowing it is in a fantastic place to continue to grow. I wish everyone at Oxford United the very best for this season and beyond, and I look forward to seeing you all again soon." U's head of football operations, Ed Waldron, added, "Elliot will go down as one of the most influential players in Oxford United's recent history. His contribution over the past 6 years cannot be overstated. On the pitch, he has been a commanding and consistent presence at the heart of our defense. Off the pitch, he has set the standard for others at the training center. Many will remember him for captaining the side to victory at Wembley, bringing championship football back to Oxford after 25 years, but his legacy runs much deeper than that. Elliot has been central to the progress this club has made both competitively and culturally. We are in a far stronger position now than when he arrived in 2019, and he deserves enormous credit for that. He leaves with the respect of everyone at Oxford United. We are extremely grateful for everything he has given to the badge, and he will always be welcome back at the club." 10-man Oxford City were thumped 5-1 at home by Radcliffe. George Burrows gave the Hoops the lead after just 6 minutes, burying the ball after the visitors failed to clear a Josh Ashby corner. Hoops right back Byron Wilson made an acrobatic clearance to hook a goal-bound effort away from danger, while Sam Lewis made a series of saves to keep the hosts in front. 3 minutes into first half stoppage time, though, Ollie Thornley side-footed a volley past Lewis. 9 minutes after the break, debutant Wilson threw himself in the way of a powerful volley, with the assistant referee feeling that Wilson kept the ball out with his hand, despite the defender arguing it came off of his shoulder. The referee, Richard Wharton, showed Wilson a straight red card, with Rio Clegg rolling in the resulting penalty. Midway through the second half, Brad Jackson slotted the ball into an empty net to make it 3-1, and then as the final quarter of an hour approached, Clegg powered through and beat Lewis at his near post. Clegg competed his hat trick a minute into second half stoppage time, weaving away towards goal before thumping the ball past Lewis. The Hoops, third from bottom in the Enterprise National League North table, are next in action on Tuesday night when they welcome Alfreton Town. Gary Rowett was pleased with the second half showing from his Oxford United side, who went toe-to-toe with free-scoring Coventry City and claimed a first point of the season. After starting the campaign with 3 straight defeats, pressure was growing on United to rectify a sluggish beginning to the season prior to the September international break. The U's fell behind to a Haji Wright goal, but responded not long after via Will Lankshire. Sky Blues midfielder Victor Torp restored the advantage for the visitors with a free kick. However, Cameron Brannigan stepped up with a mesmeric free kick of his own inside the final quarter of an hour. United head coach Rowett said, "It was quite an enjoyable game in some ways to watch. I was quite pleased with large parts of the performance. There were quite a few moments in the first half where I had my hands over my eyes, and one moment at the end where I had my hands over my eyes when they hit the bar. We played some good football in the first half, but just allowed Coventry in and around the box a little bit too easily for my liking. We were just a bit passive. Maybe that's a bit of nerves because of the way we've started and the goals that we've conceded recently, but I thought we responded really well to the goals, and the second half to me was a completely different performance, where we probably did enough to win the game, but certainly it was a much better performance. I thought we were the team really pushing. Even though they had a chance at the end, I thought we were the team pushing to go and get that winner. The U's squad for the Sky Blues clash was missing the injured Matt Ingram, Elliot Moore, and Brody Spencer. Rowett said, "I've spoken quite clearly about the injuries that we've had. It's been incredibly frustrating. I don't think I've ever experienced anything even close to it, really. We had another two or three to add to that list overnight, more or less. It's incredibly frustrating. I think the players out there and the lads that came on certainly had the impact we wanted. If we'd had any sort of injuries in key areas, I'd have had to shuffle the pack in a way that even I probably wasn't prepared for. That's the way it rolls sometimes. We've spoken about it. It's why it's important to try to strengthen where we can and try to keep improving the depth of the squad."
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, please telephone Margaret on 07496 062 280. That's 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.